Hello, all. This is Joe Wickham again with Reboot Your Relationship, and we are here to talk about some very important relationship stuff that has come up for me and for the people I am coaching and doing therapy with. To start with the Reboot Your Relationship, I am a licensed trauma-informed relationship psychotherapist, and this is the work I have been doing for over 20 years. Working with couples, relationships, trauma, and trying to get through all of the multiple dimensions that are co-occurring simultaneously in all of our relationships, where not one dimension particularly can define what the conflicts are. And I'm a little bit of a contrarian, so I always like to go to the other side of love, which is the barriers that we throw up and put into play in all these signature moves, whether it's our, where there's certain signature moves in our dance, right? Our stance, your partner's stance, and then this co-creation of a dance that we get into. So today we're going to focus on the barriers to love, the love killers, and these toxic poisons that seem to show up in all of our partnerships and relationships at one time or another. And sometimes these barriers can be really fixed ways of being. They can be coming from an aversive childhood experience. It can come from trauma, PTSD, where there have been violations of human connection and all these things. So going to this task today is not to necessarily find or seek for love or connection, because I believe it's already here. It's just merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. That's a Rumi quote that you'll hear me say all the time, because it is, to me, I think, the challenge for a lot of us to find what these barriers are within ourselves and that space between that comes into play in our partnerships, in all of our relationships. Because when you think about love, you know, just the mere contemplation of love, we're humbled, because who of us among us could ever claim to have figured this out? You know, this very difficult calculus problem that we've been handed in life and love, and to figure it out in these mysteries of love and how to make it work, you know, even baffles me sometimes. And I've been doing this for years and years and years, you know, even with the most well-intentioned people out there that have good faith, goodwill, good intention, there's still this disconnection from within ourselves and with others. So in fact, in many contexts, let's say from parenting, from birth to the grave in our parenting, to marriage or friendships, to business relationships, we find that even our best efforts even fail, and we get disappointed and finds its way into our most valued spheres of life and relationships. And we are left feeling more hurt, more confused, more pain, and in this vicious cycle and feeling more disconnected and isolated. And so this is a real thing for all of us. So why is this? Why is that the case for us? Well, there are many reasons, and this is what we're going to kind of get into. But the bottom line is, it can all come down to our basic orientation in ourselves, towards ourselves. So everything we do is just a way of kind of think of it as self-preservation or self-protection when we don't feel safe. And we have all these attachment injuries, and we'll talk about that at another time, where you can go back to all my other prior podcasts where we talk about how these attachment injuries and imprints begin to get shaped and formed in our personality, our character, our attachment styles. All that begins to play a part in the dance that we're going to talk to. But today I want to focus only on the barriers to love. Because again, we're all trying to get what we want, kind of this wish merger to get something, instead of seeing also the needs of others. And as a result of this self-orientation, we destroy all chances of getting what we want and need, which is the final analysis is always love, connection, belonging, feeling significant, answering that $96 million question I always pose to everybody. And it is, are you there for me? Can I count on you? Do you have my back? Am I important? Do I matter? Are you accessible, responsive, emotional, engaging? That question is so important and such a thing for all of us to consider. And so in this podcast today, we're going to be dedicating this to love. And we thought, and I thought it'd be appropriate to look at some of the things that we do that get in the way of love. So in some ways, it's also a look at our own maturity, for it's only a mature person who can love well. And we're going to be taking a look at the ways of functioning that prevent love from growing, from connection from growing, from expanding. And that's almost in any context, and whether it be your friendships or your marriage or parenting or your work or really any and all of your relationships. And this is going to be an important thing for us to understand going in. So looking into the mirror today, and I'm always looking in the mirror before we begin to look out there for the problem, we also have to begin looking into our own traits. And that one sober word of warning here. So when we're looking for the problems in any relationship we're in, we also do well to point the finger back at ourselves and look in the mirror, because there's no doubt that others cause some of the pain and failure of relationships in our lives. No doubt. We all do it, because it's hard to see the picture when you are in that frame. It's hard to see it, but we're running on patterns, because the reality is that we're probably adding to the problem, or if we're not, we're probably could be doing some things better that would give us a better chance of working it out, even if you find yourself in a relationship with a problem person, right? So for instance, we'll talk about one of the things around boundaries. And we're going to talk about other things here about maybe our own powers boundaries, and we train people how to treat us. And so I'm kind of like that. I'm a rescuer. I'm a hero. I get in there. I'll go put everybody else's fire out on their half their house is burning down. I'll take care of everybody. You know, if they're okay, I'm okay. If they're not okay, I'm not okay. And so I do this little hustle, right? And then my house starts burning down and I'm kind of left alone when my house is burning down. And so that could be a problem in relationships, right? So I'm looking at, and we're beginning to look at, because sometimes the most immature people can grow when in this presence of an integrating relationship. So I talked about in some of my earlier podcasts about the drama triangle, where we're below the line and we're not present, we're not aware, we're not conscious, we're not thinking about anything other than ourselves, and that below the line is, we're not present, we're not aware, we're not conscious to what's occurring underneath, below the line. And that's the drama triangle, where you have these two one-up positions, the rescuer perpetrator, and that one down position of a victim. So we've got to get above the line. We've got to get above the line into more of the empowering and empowerment triangle, where if you're the rescuer, you become more of a coach. You know, hey, what's going on here? So the perpetrator, the blamer, you're partnering, you can be more of a challenger rather than a blamer. And if you're a victim, and no one wants to be the victim, but in the end, we're all victims if we're not getting out of this, because that's the powerlessness and helplessness we all can feel when we're below the line and we're not up in being from the victim to being a creator or co-creator of this relationship. This is super important. Go back to my other podcast. You can kind of understand a little bit more about what I'm trying to impress upon people to get into that presence in integrating this relationship. So here's the thing. In looking at some of the dynamics here of what the barriers are to good relationships, I want you to keep yourself in mind. Put yourself in the picture, right? Put yourself in that. Because the more that you can take ownership of these tendencies in yourself, the more likely you are to make your relationships work and to pick people who are able to make them work as well, so that you're able to move through and get on this path and practice of love and leapfrog up that mountain with people, because mature people tend to pick mature people. It's a watermark, right? So we're going to talk today about these things that can poison love, that are toxic, that are love killers, love busters, whatever you want to call it. They destroy this delicate fabric, this delicate safety net, this delicate secure base that we're all longing to have. So, but I do want to just kind of preface it before we get into the barriers here. I want to focus on one of the things that are really, that's really important, because we have to understand what's the outcome here and where we're going. And there's a Celtic saying that goes, we live in a shelter of each other. We live in the shelter of each other, and that means we look to each other for that care and support and safety, because no one can dance with a partner and not touch each other's raw spots. That's just the human condition, right? We must know in each other the innocence, see the innocence and not the guilt, but see this, that these raw spots are, and be able to speak about them in ways that pull our partners closer to us. So I think ultimately, yes, hurt will come. And you'll hear in all my podcasts, I say there's a distinction between hurt and harm, pain and suffering. Sometimes there is hurt. Sometimes there is pain. But that's usually going to be limited. So if you break your leg, you go to the hospital, right? You have to reset the leg. That's more hurt, more pain. That happens. But you avoid and you postpone. You don't go to the hospital. That occurs. And it goes from hurt to harm, from pain to suffering, because now you're not going to the hospital. You're avoiding it. Your leg gets fixed a certain way. And now you're walking and climbing up this mountain with a gimp. And now you're trying to do this three-legged race with each other. And you're both falling down because you're staying in the not just the hurt, but now it goes to harm. And that's self-harm and other harm, because we're in a relationship and we're avoiding certain things or blaming. And so we want to make some of these distinctions, because I think ultimately, again, love is like a dance, and it's a constant process of discovery. Communication is a dynamic process of discovery, where we're constantly learning and tuning in, kind of like this attunement, turning in, we're connecting, we're missing and misreading cues, we're disconnecting, repairing, and finding deeper connection. So it is a dance of meeting. It's that stance, stance, and these dances, two fixed binary positions and meeting. And here we have that dance of meeting and partying and finding each other again. And it's that minute to minute, day to day thing. But as long as we're choosing love and choosing each other, we have to begin learning to dance more gracefully with that unforced rhythm of grace over time and experience. That means committing to dancing on this dance floor every day and paying attention and tuning to the music, steps, and motion of the dance. And here's the thing about dancing and music, right? So the emotions of music. So every song has a melody, right? So just because you don't hear the melody does not mean it doesn't exist. It just means we're tone deaf. We can't hear it. We can't experience it. We can't feel it. So I'm here to help you learn to dial in so we're not tone deaf, you know, or let's say just because you don't see the colors out there and everything's kind of black and white, doesn't mean it's the world's not black. It doesn't mean that the world's black and white. This means we're colorblind and we're not seeing the technicolor and the multiple dimensions that are moving, you know, all these moving hearts and parts. And so we want to be able to get on this dance floor and talk about this emotion and feelings. Because here's the thing, when we get into these barriers to love and these blocks, the stressed partners can't really see each other as their emotional safe haven. They feel unsafe. And our lover is supposed to be the one person who can count on you, who will always respond, engage, and emotionally engage, be available and responsive and, you know, accessible. Instead of unhappy partners, they're feeling emotionally deprived, rejected, even abandoned, which goes back to some of our imprints and attachment styles where we felt that. You get into these relationships too where you felt idealized, you felt valued, and all of a sudden now you're being devalued and rejected and abandoned, and now you get into this disposable relationship, that one that you thought you could really count on. But why do you keep playing that pattern over and over again? It's like, you know, it's like whack-a-mole. You keep going in there, and it's whack-a-mole's fun for the first 5-10 minutes, but over time and experience and months or years of that, it's exhausting. It causes more fear, more frustration, more fatigue, more failure, and you know, your lover's supposed to be there instead of, but instead these unhappy partners, you feel this emotional deprivation. So in that light, this is where couples conflicts assume their true meaning. This is that we are making these frightened protests against the eroding connection, and it becomes a demand for emotional re-engagement. And then it's kind of this pursue withdraw dynamic. And you can go back to my other podcast where we get into understanding how that pain cycle or fear cycle or vicious cycle, whatever you want to call that little dynamic, where shame cycle, whatever that is, whatever the starting part of that is, and that dynamic and that triangle happens to occur, because we all have our initiation point and then how we respond to that. So learning to love and to be loved is in effect about learning to tune in to our own emotions and that our own partners, so that we know what we need from partner, expressing those desires vulnerably and openly and courageously in a way that evokes compassion and support from your partner to create that secure base both of you can rely on. And that is such an important place. And sometimes you can't get there on your own. So I'm here to help you kind of work through that. But let's dive in. Let's talk about what are some of these barriers to love. What are the love killers? What are what's the toxic thing that we all have to begin to be aware of, and how we are either contributing to that, or if we're in a relationship with someone that's unwilling to maybe join you on the dance floor and work through these things. So the first one, number one, is going to be self-centeredness, or this sense of egocentricity, right? That self, that ego, you know, so I'm always saying drop the ego, drop the story. But many people think of, let's say, like selfish people as being kind of difficult. But self-centeredness comes closer to this real description of what a truly selfish person is. And what it means is that someone's basically experiencing life mostly in terms of his or herself, him or herself. Someone has said this, it's only looking through the lens, their own lens, to interpret. There's this one saying, it says, to interpret any event only in terms of how it affects oneself is to live at the doorstep of hell. And that's true, right? Again, there are multiple dimensions occurring, co-occurring simultaneously, and no one dimension can define the conflict. But if you're only looking at through your lens and not getting other, come alongside and seeing it from the other person's perspective, okay, this is when one is self-centered. And I guess, I guarantee you, that's a failure to your love. That's a barrier. It is, for love is an attachment between two people. And a self-centered person denies the reality of the other person. Because all of us want, and you, me, all of us, okay? And this is what makes it hard, is we all want to be validated. We all want our reality and experience to be seen, gotten. Because that's empathy. That's compassion. And I wanted to just say that this is going to be one of the things that we've got to all kind of begin to understand. Because when we do that, and we're in that, that's when the other person sees others as merely just an extension of ourselves or himself or herself. And the other person, there's this wish merger, and they exist to make that him happy and serve his needs and regulate his feelings or drives in life. And then they fail, when they fail to do what, you know, they do any of those things. And by having an existence of their own, it's the other person, right? Their own selfhood, gives some sort of negative reaction. We get angry, or withdrawal of love. We either get angry, lash out, or withdraw, withhold, stonewall, right? Or distance, you know, controlling behavior or reactions or rejections. And that orientation to another person being more of an object for self-gratification than a person making a true attachment here is now made impossible. Because love requires two people, not one person and an object. We could write about this dynamic and talk about this dynamic, it go through this whole dynamic for quite a while. But one quick way to understand it is to look at it in terms of that quote above, that quote that we just talked about, the only me, right, involves but never adapting to someone else's wishes or needs, or sacrificing something that I want for another person or purpose or group larger than myself, or to think that the significance of events or people only as I am benefited or denied, so there's no folding in to the dynamic. And that's going to be something that we have to work on and we have to get into. And so that's the part that we are all trying to work towards. Okay, so the next barrier, okay, this is a lack of observing oneself, right? Lack of observing oneself. I hear it all the time, you know. I am very self-aware. Okay, they go, I'm self-aware. I go, okay, you're self-aware. But along with being self-aware, observing yourself, and how are you also other-aware? Are you aware of other people? And are you, because here's one of the things, there's this lack of observing self. There's the I, or the me, and the we. And here the idea is this, and is one of the most frustrating qualities that anyone can experience. And the inability to see one's own behavior, especially when one is wrong. So if you've ever had that experience, to be in a relationship with someone who did not see what they are, how they're contributing to the problem, because they're in that stance, there's such little hope to get past any conflict that you might be having, right? Because in any relationship, you know, you're 100% responsible for your 50%, your 50%. I'm 100% responsible for my 50%. And so what's my 50%? If I'm not willing to observe myself and go, what's my 50% here? Because no person or relationship is perfect, and we can work out any kind of conflict with anyone as long as two people that are involved are able and willing to look at their own behavior and own it. The act of ownership of our wrongs makes moving past the conflict and getting to deeper connection possible when we're able to do that. And when someone cannot see their wrong, the relationship gets stuck and we get into these barriers to love, connection. And so now this mutual injury, the injured party feels hopeless, and there's little chance for confronting them or comforting them by the one who hurt them, because no apology is forthcoming. It's never going to come. The conflict cannot be solved. There's no solving for that very difficult calculus problem. So that's another barrier. So here's the other one. Our inability to validate another's experience. And I've already kind of mentioned this a lot in my other podcasts and in my therapy, and you know, in this here, talking about our need to being understood. It's one of our deepest needs, our deepest psychic cravings, because we don't really need to know that we're right. I don't need to know that I'm right. Right? I don't. As much as I need to know that someone understands how we feel and how I feel, what our reality is, what our experience is. And because making that connection with your partner is called empathy, and vice versa. So when we feel a certain way, we need to know that others can validate our experience, meaning that they understand how it is for us. And we got to do that for them too. Because we need to be listened to and understood. That love talk, listening, understanding, validating, and not quickly negate for how we feel and what we think. Because here's the thing. Research, all the research I have done on attachment injuries and wounds and how people get into the most serious emotional disorders come from having one's emotions misunderstood or invalidated, or they're made wrong. For instance, how do you feel when someone says, oh, come on, that didn't hurt, or that wasn't so bad? You know, because we immediately go further away inside our heart and feel a breach with that person, a betrayal of, let's say, trust. Because on the other hand, when someone says something that shows their understanding, we're much more open to input about their reality and our reality. When we're able to do that, because when someone can say and lean in and say, wow, it sounds like that was really difficult for you. How'd that feel? How'd that land for you? Where'd you go? What'd you do? What happened? Is it, so that's an example of an empathic statement that draws people closer together. It's caring. It's love. It's understanding. Not personalizing it or diminishing it, but understanding how someone feels or thinks or how an experience was for them is something that builds bonds, connections between people. And the inability that one has or this lack or limitation to do that destroys connection and alienates us from having that secure, functioning adult relationship. And that's where we get stuck in a lot of ways. The other one that we're going to talk about is that the barrier to love is playing fair, right? Playing fair. Well, that one kind of sounds like, what? Playing fair? That seems like it would be the right thing to do. But for what happens here is it seems that playing fair would be a good thing. It means that we treat others as they treat us, right? So if they're kind, then we're kind. If they hurt us, then we hurt them back. If they're immature, then they're immature. It's that pain for pain. It's that more and more, the more pain that ensues, right? The hurt for hurt, injury for injury, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, okay? It's easy for us to be good to those who earn it. But taking charge of your love and being in that space, the problem is that no one earns it all the time. And every relationship has problem behavior. This is why simple fairness cannot work, because what happens for them, here's the deal, is like the worst behavior in a relationship becomes the common denominator. And then we're just sinking and running our patterns, and you run your patterns, I run my patterns. So to transcend a pattern, a fixed way of being in this relationship, you cannot just simply play fair and return, you know, hurt for hurt, pain for pain, evil for evil. The only way for any relationship to overcome our imperfections is for all of us to be bigger than that. Our highest purpose to the atonement here is the undoing of fear and shame and return to grace and truth instead of the injury. Simple fairness will kill any relationship because we keep going, well, that's not fair. You're right, it wasn't fair, but we got to get to the other part, right? All right, another barrier, another thing that puts us into gridlock or an impasse or something that just shuts us down from connection is emotional detachment. That's another barrier, right? The lights are on, but nobody's home. Nobody's home. You know, it's that emotional unavailability. It's to be emotionally detached is to be out of touch with our own feelings and unable to be emotionally present in a relationship. And it can be a killer to intimacy because it feels to the other party that we're alone, even though someone's there. It's like they're there, but they're not there. So when we're out of touch with our feelings, if I'm not connected here, I can't be connected there as well. And I wanted to get into this idea of how do we get connected to feel close, because we need to be present emotionally. Our needs, our vulnerabilities, our fears, pain, tender feelings, all that stuff. And like most, be communicated, expressed, because what gets repressed, okay, what we continue to, what resists continues to persist. And that keeps going on. And when someone is detached from a feeling or the ability to express them, the other person cannot feel the kind of connection that we think as intimacy or being known, because intimacy is joining in the truth with love and acceptance. Intimacy involves the heart as well as the mind. It's love and logic. It's love and logic. It's grace and truth. Because if someone is out of touch with our own deep feelings in the innermost parts, then these shallow relationships are what follows. And that's really painful because you're trying to. And for a lot of us, we had to numb out our negative emotions. All those negative emotions that we had as children, shut those down, and which also made us kind of unable to experience our positive emotions because we're numbing those out as well. And so our bandwidth gets really tight when it comes to connection. The other one is this control and denial of separateness, not being able to be, that's another barrier here. We're going to talk a lot about that as well in other podcasts. We're going to get into that, because the idea of freedom to love, freedom in relationship, is so important. See, but the reality is that many people do not honor freedom in relationships. They feel it as a threat, right? They don't see the other person as a free person from them, able to make their own choices and decisions and have their own desires. They see that as being a threat to them. Instead, they see the other as an extension of the self, and these strong attempts to control the freedom of the one they love is repressive. It's oppression. It's domination. Now, love can only exist when there is freedom. And our attempts to control what another person thinks or feels or wants or does or values, believes, whatever, this is destined to drive anyone away and ultimately destroy love. Because love only exists when we see another person in their own self, with their own sovereignty, their own rights as a separate individual, while also working towards a we, right? So when someone says no, we're to respect it. And when they have choices and wishes that are different from ours, we're to respect them as well. But again, this is two powerful people accommodating, adjusting, meeting each other's needs. And if there's good faith, goodwill, and you're both trying to get into that space, that shared space, that space between, but you have to have that sense of freedom or it becomes controlling and manipulative. And we all do that. I mean, we're all controlling in some ways, right? And, you know, it could be that one person who's the immovable object who's always saying no, right? Because of maybe it's a fear or something, or the unstoppable force. It's always saying, you know, boundaryless and kind of stepping over those boundaries. And you got to work out those types of dynamics. Really super important. Okay. The next one is this idea of the wish for paradise, right? Now, there was a time when everything was perfect, called a paradise, and everything was good. And what we understand is that we all have this, when we get into the world of relationships, we always want the relationship with people to be perfect. But we've lost that perfection. We lost that, and we're grieving the loss of perfection, connection, belonging. And so we're in relationship with people who have imperfections. Okay? We all have them. I have my hurts, my habits, my hangups, my flaws. And I own that. So the extent that some of us have, we've got to come to grip with the reality that we have, you know, to have satisfactory relationships, we gotta almost grieve the loss of the ideal. Okay, grieve and accept, get into, because this is about grieving loss of perfection in a lot of ways, the denial of that, you know, the anger that ensues, the anger of hope, the anger of despair, the depression, anxiety, the bargaining. And then we get into a state of love and acceptance of those differences, those imperfections. And then we can accept others for who they are and solve the problems. They don't become these vicious cycles, because if we still have a wish to be in this garden of perfection where there's everything's perfect, we're always going to be frustrated with people that we find themselves connected to, because we're always wanting more. And they judge and protest the reality of who the person is. And there is very little safety for love to grow when we start with perfection and we're trying to just to get to be okay. And so if they're not okay, I'm not okay. And if I'm not okay, they're not okay. And this whole vicious cycle. So another way of looking at it, narcissism and perfectionisms are killers to real relationship, real love. Because real love can only grow where someone's real self, their real self, their true self, can be known and accepted by another person. Because if there are demands for perfection and the ideal person, you know, the swish merger, then love is blocked and there's no way through it. Okay. The other two, there are other several here that are super important that we're going to talk about in future podcasts, but I'm just going to kind of start here. Because this is something I see and talk about a lot. And that's the I know better. Excuse me, I've been sick. If you haven't noticed, I'm sorry for sniffling and coughing. But I have here to get this content out to everybody this year. But here's the thing about another barrier to think about. The idea that I know better, and there's these other parental dynamics, this one up, one down type of dynamic. That could be like a teacher student, parent child, one up, one down, top dog, bottom dog, lover, beloved, sinner, saint, rescuer, victim, perpetrator, victim. I talk about all these I know better parental dynamics, the helicopter parent, the drill sergeant parent, and the relationships rather than being, you know, finding our way to equality, right? And go back to my other podcast and the power struggles and power. How powerful people, power couples, power struggle. But adults who are in significant relationships are meant to be equals and share the reality of those, you know, and who they are in the spirit of this mutuality. And if we don't, we get into another mutual injury of this one up, one down dynamics. Because some people, however, don't want to be equals, but one up, they want to be one up on the person that gives them a sense of control. In a sense of, you know, so they don't have to deal with their own anxieties and fears of losing control or feeling or fear of being enmeshed or fear of being abandoned. Right? So they want to be more of a parent-child type of connection where they're in charge. So we have these expectations for the other to be in this kind of subjugation or subjection to them in some strange way. And there's this dominating style that we get into, and this type of I know better stance, this stance blocks love and creates a barrier in a very horrible way, is because the person who is under you, or if you're under them, you feel belittled, controlled, dominated, disrespected, you know. And if we're not wired for that, so the more I feel dominated, the more I avoid domination. So in this best scenario here, the so-called benevolent dictator, this rescuer, altruistic person is trying to do, the one on the bottom rung fails to grow up and develop into who they are really meant to be, right? So the very thing that you want needs kind of scary. So typical of these types of stances are a lot of you shoulds that dominate the person's thinking, right? Demands, control, you should, you oughta, you know, you must. You know, expectations without consent creates this resentment. And, you know, so you got to have this talk. And so here's the thing, as we freely tell other people how to think, how to live, how to be, and how to, what to do, whether you're a helicopter partner or a drill sergeant partner, you know, you don't know how to think for yourself or do for yourself. So I'm going to do it, think it for you. That becomes the biggest problem in love, and this type of connection comes from a resentment. Again, these expectations without consent, this resentment in the one up, person down, and their drive to become independent from this dominating space. We're all, you know, to be equals here, all to be equals and put no one on a parent pedestal, because eventually the ideal parent will fall down because we're not designed that way. Because this is where I see this happen all the time, where someone gets idealized, right? Because there's a switch merge, right? That they have all this stuff, and then when they fall down, all this valuing, then you devalue and then reject and abandon and dispose, because now you're feeling a sense of disappointment. I don't know who you are. And now you're putting your projection of, you know, because they're now not being the ideal. Last one we're going to talk about is lack of boundaries. Okay, boundaries is a big thing. And I talk about that all the time, because that barrier to love is, we want to consider, is the lack of boundaries here. And what this means is that someone's inability to take a stance of self-control, and it's coming out of a place of anxiety, and to have a proper relation to the word no. No. Okay. Boundaries are several. It's like this psychic internal rule or boundary where we're saying, you know, we're trying to protect ourselves and set a boundary against the world. So the world, you know, there's that sense of safety saying no to the world to protect ourselves, right? In the world. And also the internal boundary, I'm going to keep the world protected from me, right? It's two ways. It's, you know, again, having healthy boundaries, but again, healthy boundaries, there's a distinction in one of my podcasts I make between rules and boundaries. Rules come from a fear, a wound, and how that comes up. And boundaries are healthy. You quarantine it. You let the good stuff in and the bad stuff out. Sometimes people have very rigid boundaries and counter-dependent boundaries that say no to everything, right? So when we have these kind of disturbances, we either allow people to walk all over us, become that exploding doormat that destroys the respect, or we walk all over them and trespass against them, destroying love in the process, trampling all over the stuff. Because true love, you know, taking charge of love and true love respects each other's boundaries. And we create an environment, an atmosphere of love and respect, and create that atmosphere. So saying no when we need to and respecting it when we hear it. So this is another aspect of boundaries, has to do with requiring, you know, responsible behavior from each other in a relationship, and taking that stance and getting out of that stance that we talk about against the bad when it occurs, right? Because true love cannot grow in dysfunction and chaos. Is also to triumph here and destroy the barrier, the connection. So when we have the boundaries to take a stance against it, we preserve the good, quarantining the good in the relationship, and helps it to grow by solving these problems, okay, rather than running these patterns and these unconscious ways of being, right? This is such an important thing. It's stuff that you're going to learn in my podcast, as well as, again, a coach with me and do therapy or any of this trauma-informed stuff, because a lot of these barriers are rooted in our defenses, right? This wounded child, and the adaptive child who had to learn to be really black and white, rigid, cut off, shut down, unyielding, relentless, you know, tight the body, and to become that functioning adult that is nuanced and flexible and empathetic and caring and vulnerable and you know, taking the mask of the invulnerability off so we can really connect. Because love's an easy thing to accomplish in life when we roll up our sleeves, but it's not easy to accomplish. In fact, love is so difficult sometimes because of our particular inclinations, really these patterns to do the very things we just talked about here. There's a part of all of us that tends to try to please ourselves instead of accomplish love, right? To lean into that. And in the process, we lose the love that we wanted in the first place that we were so committed to and devoted. Because remember, love just doesn't just happen. It doesn't just happen. Takes work, but again, we're not here to be each other's caretaker for the other's wounded child. We're here to be playmates for each other's child and to work and to play with the resistance of all this, to play with that resistance so we can, you know, get to play rather than make it work all the time. But you do have to spend that time, because a part of that work will have, you know, that you're going to have to do with me is to avoid the kinds of barriers to love that we just mentioned above. And to talk about those things, you know, in a healthy, constructive kind of way, right? To get to that secure functioning, all right? So I hope this has been helpful for all of us as we kind of think about 2020, where we're going, what we're standing for, what we're going to be fighting for, what we want in our relationships, your higher purpose. Give me a call, Joe Whitcomb, 310-560-0726. We do FaceTime, we do Skype, we do in person. I have an office in Carlsbad and San Diego, where we work from. And we would love to, you know, see how we can help you break through any of these upper limit barriers to love. All right. Thanks so much. And again, make 2020 your best year ever. Be well.